Imagine a world where we are all living with purpose and are able to express our authentic selves. Today, we are joined by Kay Munday, who is a communications coach who helps people and brands communicate authentically by taking ownership of their story and confidently communicating it to the world. Kay helps people overcome their fear of speaking and ultimately inspire others. Kay Munday's remarkable journey includes roles at Google, working as a creative business partner at YouTube, and her work also extends to the LGBTQ plus community, ensuring visibility as well as women's advancement in technology. Today we will cover crafting your own narrative, the six key elements for communication that you absolutely have to know, how do we unlock our creative potential and make sure that our stories are retold. You are in for a hugely impactful and authentic conversation. Enjoy. I want to take you back to some of those early days, and I'm really interested if you can share with us a pivotal moment that got you interested in public speaking and take us back to where all that came from.
So I've been asked this so many times, and to be honest, there wasn't one. I think there was like a series of, should we call it failures? Failures and learnings. Let's call it failures and learnings. And that was really where I got to the point where I was like, right, I need to do something about this. So it was everything from like, have you ever had those moments where you've wanted to like put up your hand and say something, but you're like, oh, should I? Am I going to sound stupid? Am I? Yeah. And then like you don't. Do you know what's annoying is that then there's always somebody who asks that question you wanted to ask, isn't there? Or there's always like, oh, somebody says something similar and they go, oh, that's a really good point. And you're like, oh, I wish I'd said that. So that was like one. I think also just, you know, I was going into rooms presenting to, you know, boardrooms of, you can imagine, males predominantly in the finance sector at the time. And they were like, yeah, middle-aged white male, should we say, going in. And I was like a young, you know, female. So already I feel like I had to pitch myself in to win their attention. And then when I was fumbling and struggling over my words, that was it. It was like game over. So those types of situations. But then also in my personal life as well, that I just really struggled to express how I was feeling. And so actually what I realized is in all of these things in my life, all of these circumstances, there was a common denominator and it was communication. So that's when I really decided to sit myself down and go, look, we need to do something about this, don't we? Let's get really honest. What is the problem here? It is communication. I wasn't at the time very good at it. I was happy to admit that. I came from a family that didn't really communicate very well. And I'm dyslexic. And it's something that I've always found really challenging. I've always, you know, shied away from it. So that's when I sat myself down. I said, like, right, let's just take ownership. Let's own this and let's go and do something about it. And that was my pivotal moment.
So after you'd had those experiences, and you thought, I need to do something. What was the first action that you took that felt like you were really kind of moving forward?
Get a coach, if I'm honest. Yeah, it was getting a coach. I was like, I recognized I needed help. It's that first thing, isn't it? It's that, right, there's a problem. Second thing is taking action. And I recognized that, yeah, I could figure it out, but it would be a slower journey, definitely. So actually going and getting help, getting a coach to help me along that journey was a much nicer, quicker and easier route.
Absolutely. And was that coach specifically on communication, or was it getting you to where you wanted to in your career and you thought, okay, actually one of my stumbling blocks is communication? What was the brief at the very early stages?
Yeah, it was a speaking coach. I had a few. Do you know what? I love coaching. I really am a massive advocate of it. And that's just because I've seen how effective it's been for myself. And so I had a few different coaches, like including a therapist, a life coach, and a speaking coach. And then I was going on different courses around the different aspects. There's so many different aspects to effective communication, aren't there? So all of the different things from like, how do you even write an email, to then how do you get up and present, and how do you have difficult conversations? So yeah, there was many different things I've done, but all around communication.
Yeah, That's really helpful advice, I think, for taking that first step is go to somebody else that is not going to do any of the work for you. You're going to have to do all of that, but just to guide you and shape you and kind of get you to where you need to be. I've discovered recently for myself, like, I've got to a stage where, okay, I can present and I'm pretty happy doing that, but I've had a few different types of presentations that are maybe purely speaking now, or it's a dinner, I think, right, I really have to get these 3 points across. And actually, that's so, I'm finding that's a really hard skill to learn, because I've had like a slide or an aid. And actually, when you're just up there on your own, you feel like a little bit kind of, you don't have anything to rely on. So I'm interested if you've got any quick tips that I'm selfishly taking for myself.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the first thing we do, we always like jump to the slides. I think that's from coming from a corporate background is where we always tend to go anyway. So I always say that like visual aids are great because we've obviously got different learners in the room. We're going to have some that are kinesthetic, some that are auditory, and some that are visual. So we want to be touching on all of those points so that we make sure we're speaking to those audience members. However, just to recognize that like slides are only ever there to just be a visual aid. That's all they really are. So reading off slides, that's a big no-no. And, you know, otherwise, why not just like send them the deck? Why do you even need to be there? And you're the value, you're the asset. So I think that's the thing. And actually, if we can take that away, if we can take away our scripts as well, I know lots of people, and including myself, I will sometimes do a brain dump and write out what I want to say and distill it down into bullet points to remember, especially if it's a talk. But if we can then just like get rid of that and get into our trust, and that's really all that it's about. So when I do my coaching, it's about getting people to that belief state where they truly believe in their own abilities and they're fully relaxed and in their power. And that's really what it's all about.
That moves me nicely on to asking about how or what do you think that it is that really creates a compelling narrative for an audience? So how do you get them really bought into your personal brand or story or what you're trying to get across? Like, what are your best ways of creating that narrative?
Okay, so I have had a little bit of a think about this, talking about script writing. And I've actually got six, but I'm going to tell you three now. Okay. And if we've got time, come back to us at the end and I'll tell you the other three. But they're all brilliant. So the first one, we've talked about it already, right? So it's authenticity. Like, people really can tell if you're really passionate about something and you really believe in it, or you kind of like a bit don't really believe in what you're saying and you're a bit, you know, yeah, there's a real different energy behind that that people can feel. And actually Google did a study on this around authenticity and found that actually it's associated with higher consideration and can drive longer term brand loyalty up to 39%. So if you're more authentic, it has a much more increased likelihood for people to consider you or your brand. And then nicely leads me into the second one, which is vulnerability. I truly believe vulnerability is a superpower. So if we can get really honest early doors, it builds that psychological safety. It also makes us more relatable. So people go, oh, yeah, that's like me. I've been through that as well. Oh, that's how I feel. And also likability as well. Like, no one's perfect. So if we try and give off this like whole facade that we're like, you know, seamless, actually it's really unrelatable, right? So if we can, and that's it. I think whenever I've made a mistake and just owned it and been like, oh, that's just happened, people really warm to that. And that's, you know, I think comedians do it really well, don't they? They're cutting edge of vulnerability and honesty. And actually, that's why they're really funny. So you can actually add some humor and real life experiences. I think if we add those real life experiences in, people can go, oh, you know, put themselves in that real life experience and relate to that. And that's what it's all, the third one then. So first one, authenticity, second one, vulnerability. Third one, I'd say hooking them by answering what's in it for them. Because ultimately, as nice as it is to talk about ourselves, That's not really what we're here for. It's like, how do you then turn that into a so what for somebody else? And that's it. So why should they be listening to you rather than somebody else? What can you actually do for them? How's that going to change their world? And what's that emotion that they perhaps are coming in with? So for myself, it's fear, right? Fear is the biggest core negative emotion that I work with. And I help turn that into confidence for people. So what can that look and feel like? So I would say authenticity, vulnerability, and hook them with emotion.
And I would imagine that audiences make up their mind pretty quickly if they're going to fully engage with whatever the speaker is speaking about. Will you try and get those three elements in, like, right off the bat? So whether you're starting on story and getting something in that helps them connect, and then the what's in it, do you have like a checklist almost for your intros? I'm interested how you get that across.
I feel like you're almost trying to tease out me the other 3 points, but you're right. It takes, that's why the skip button on YouTube, right, is 6 seconds, because it's that first 5 seconds that are critical. We've got to grab people's attention and really like draw them in. So actually emotion, going back to that last point, is we're humans, we're emotive beings. So we can get that emotion up front and center to start off with. People feel first and then they rationalize and they objectively then make a decision on what they're going to do. But first we need to feel that feeling. So I would say to anybody, it's like, what do you want your audience to feel? And how do you land that really early doors?
That's great. So moving on to feelings, you have overcome fear many times throughout your career. How did you do that? How did you start with that? Do you still feel that fear? Because I know, you know, public speaking is number one, number two, top fear after, before death, whatever it is. Now it's just, we're terrified and you've overcome that and completely are thriving within that space. So can you talk a little bit about your personal experience with fear and how you help others?
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Apparently it's number one. I don't know. But yeah, they say, don't they? You'd rather be in the casket than reading your eulogy. So, right? But it's 75% of the population suffer with speech anxiety. And that's why it's so popular. That's why so many people are looking and seeking help with how to communicate effectively. And for me, that was that first. It's like that taking ownership and acknowledging. It's obviously nice to know you're not alone, first of all, right? So it's nice to know you're not alone. And I think that gives us the permission to be like, right, okay, I'm not alone. I can also be one of those people who's actually struggling with this. But firstly, taking ownership and acknowledging that emotion. So what is it, you know, when you are about to go on stage or speak up in a meeting or, you know, influence your clients and you get that sweaty, palmed, hot face, flushes, like dig deeper, take the time to acknowledge and then label it. It's the only time I really like labels is labeling emotions, because it can be really helpful. But actually, okay, is it fear? Right, okay. And then what do we do about that? And I think that first thing then, once we've taken ownership, is taking action. And it goes back to that first point of like getting a coach. I really do think that it's a much quicker, easier way of doing things. And then, you know, that coach can really help you hold you accountable, give you the space and the skills and the structures, etc., to actually practice. And every time that you are practicing, as long as you take the knowledge, so that's one of my core pillars is feedback, because I just truly think it's a gift. All of the feedback that you get, actually incorporating that and making sure that every time you are then repeating that action, you are improving. And what that does is it actually gives us like some confirmation. Oh, hang on a second. That was a lot better than last time. Oh, I am getting better at this. Oh, I can do this. And then celebrating the wins, right? We're so much of the time we're looking for the negatives or we're looking for the future, but like sit in the moment and like really embrace that, like, yeah, that was good. I'm going to like, yeah, going to own that. So that's my process anyway.
That's a great process. And I know that you're a fan of videoing and creating lots of different bits of content. Do you watch back your sessions and critique yourself as well and kind of look at different things you can do? How's that process for you? I personally find that quite difficult to do, but I'm interested.
100%. It's yeah. Do you know why it's difficult to watch yourself back? I think a lot of people struggle to hear themselves and watch themselves is because of identity. Because sometimes when they see themselves back, they don't recognize that person because they're not truly being authentic. They're like putting on an act. And then when they don't, they're like, oh God, that's like, so it shocks them because it's not really who they truly believe that they are. And then, but yeah, absolutely. I'm always recording myself. It's like a bit of a running joke at work. They'll always bring my tripod along over my shoulder. And I think it's really important. But and also what I do this for clients as well, but not just record myself, but I'll record the audience as well. So that when I'm landing points that I think are really effective, I want to know, are they actually really effective? Now, if I'm making a joke that I think is really funny and no one's laughing, there is a problem. I need to change the joke or be funnier. So, yes, I definitely believe in recording and getting feedback.
That's a really good idea to record the audience. I never thought to do that. Or, yeah, the points where you think, okay, find the people that are kind of nodding along with you or who's looking like a little bit confused. And that's a great idea. I never heard that. And I think what I've found when I've watched recordings back is the things that you think maybe didn't go well or whatever it was in the moment, when you actually watch that back, you don't notice it a lot of the time. Like, it's quite magnified when it's all within, you know, your own headspace and it's all happening in real time. But actually you watch it back and you're like, oh, I got all flustered. And actually you're like, oh, it was fine. It's just we are our kind of own main character when we're actually in the moment. But yeah, it's not so bad when you watch it on the recording.
It's so, so true, isn't it? We're our own worst critics, aren't we? And then we like underplay it. So many times I've come off stage and been like, oh, that wasn't very good. And then told people about it as well. And people are like, what are you talking about? That was amazing. But in my head, I know all of the things that I wish I had or had not done.
Yeah. And people will say the same to you. Oh, did you not notice when this happened and that happened? And you're like, no, I actually didn't, because you're just listening and it's just so much of that gets lost. And I think it's how you handle these things and not, you know, getting in a big fluster and just thinking, okay, take your time, the tech breaks, whatever, you know, make a joke or just quietly continue rather than exaggerating, which sometimes we can go a bit overboard there. So recently, you have had a profound and transformative experience by coming out and really sharing your authentic self with the wider business community. Can you share a little bit about your coming out story and how it has influenced your coaching and your business self?
Yeah, massively. Massively. It really has. It's honestly probably the most difficult thing that I've done in my life. It was really, really tough. And I come from quite a homophobic family, and I genuinely thought that was it. I was gonna lose my whole family, I was gonna lose my whole friendship groups. And was I really willing and prepared to do that? And the answer was yes. You just have to. Well, you didn't have to, but I did. I felt like I just had to be true to myself. And that's exactly what that was. But to get to there, I had to ask myself that big question of who am I? Like, because I was like, if I'm going to do this, I need to be certain. It can't just be like, you know, one day I decide this and then I want to change directions. I wanted to really be, you know, clear on who I am. And I think that question is actually something that I wish more people ask themselves and took the time. Like, we're so busy, aren't we, in our lives, that rarely do we actually like take that time for ourselves, sit down with a notepad, think about these things. What do I want? What's meaningful for me? And yeah, so I decided to make that jump. But I would say that actually, upon reflection, that's one example. There's also been other examples in my life, dropping out of university being one. Parents weren't too best pleased with that. Yeah. Nope. And like breaking up with somebody who I thought was the love of my life, that we were going to get married and have kids together. And actually making those decisions that were really hard in the moment, but felt like I needed to do for me. And that just proves that every single time that I put myself first and being authentic, it's paid dividends tenfold in the long run. So I think actually the learning from it is that, yeah, what do they say? You can't have the rainbow without a bit of rain. And actually doing doing the painful thing, the hard thing in the short term can have way better long-term gains.
Yeah, and the authenticity piece just wins every single time, you know, and I think that is just an incredible story, and thanks for sharing. And yeah, I'm just so happy for you. I think that's just amazing. And I know that you'll have influenced so many people along that way and had a lot of feedback from the wider community. So yeah, amazing story. So moving on to all of the different speakers and groups that you've supported through, whether it's mentoring or coaching or just more specifically on public speaking through the different companies that you've had, what have you seen different challenges in terms of speakers from diverse backgrounds, and how can you help people address these challenges in the different unique ways that they might be experiencing?
Yeah, I think one of the most common that I get is people coming to me going, oh, can you help me with my accent? Like, can you get rid of my accent? And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, that's what we're going to lean more into, if anything. Like, that is your, you know, your uniqueness. It tells a bit of your story, doesn't it? And that's something that I want people to like fully take ownership, as long as it's not hindering them, of course. We want to make sure that they're pronouncing properly and that the audience can actually understand them. But as long as that's not getting in the way, and because obviously if your audience can't understand the speaker, that can be quite confusing and actually lead to them being a little bit unsettled. And that's the opposite. We want to make sure the audience are feeling nice and relaxed so that they can take on as much information as possible. However, yeah, owning their story. And that goes with, I work with a lot of non-native English speakers. And I do always, by the way, commend them, because I'm like, I only speak really, but I can properly own one language. And for them to be speaking in in their non-native language and presenting and all sorts, like, that's super, super impressive. But just there's some techniques that you can use, and just things like slowing down, really like taking your time, over explaining things if need be, what might seem like over explaining to you, but to the audience they might need a little bit more of that. Using really simple language as well, not trying to overcomplicate things, of course. And I think then I also work with a lot of minority groups, and you can imagine in minority groups there can be some pretty big traumatic stories. And this is what I was actually doing at the start of my coaching, as I was working with these individuals. And I mean, brilliant stories, but also unaddressed emotions. So a lot of sadness, hurt, fear, guilt, anger, all these emotions cropping up through their stories. And that's where actually I then decided to go and become a practitioner of NLP and hypnosis myself, because this was the only thing that really helped me with my trauma. And so now I became a practitioner in this, so that when I'm now coaching these individuals, that's the first thing we do, is go through your story. And then I help them to get rid of those negative emotions. We clear the negative emotions. We go through the limiting decisions or beliefs they've had. So I'm just not very good at speaking, or actually sometimes I'm confident, but sometimes I'm not confident. We clear that so that we actually then can start from a level playing field and then build on what are the positive things that they want for themselves. How do they want to be as a speaker? And I think this is really important, because I would say to somebody, before you go and speak about a topic, make sure that you've actually addressed that emotion, because you do not want to be bringing that raw emotion unsolved onto stage, because that can be really uncomfortable, again, for an audience.
Yeah, and that's just amazing for people to go through processing that emotion and then actually being able to use that as part of their own story and their vulnerability, because you've kind of dealt with it, but you use that to say, this is my story, this is where I've come from, and here's what I'm sharing with you to create a connection today. So that's an incredible way to work with the people that you're coaching and supporting, and bringing together a few different elements, because really, I don't know if every public speaking coach would go into that detail of, your past and your trauma and all of your emotion, which is so much part of who you're bringing to the stage. So yeah, that sounds excellent.
That's it. And I think that's really ultimately what sets me aside from a speaking coach. I mean, firstly, I don't teach people how to speak. I teach people how to be themselves, and then how to express themselves in being authentic. So it's actually beyond a speaking coach. You're right. And it's also going into therapy as well and healing them. It's a healing journey, ultimately. It's not for everyone, I don't think. It's for people who really want it and want to change and want better for themselves. And then coupling that, I also bring in, of course, my business experience and knowledge and exposure to social media platforms and all of that. So then when we have this package narrative, they can take it to market. They know how to express themselves on whatever channel or platform that they want to do that, that's again authentic to them and to their audience. And that's the process. I really don't know if any other speaking coach is doing that.
Yeah, it's really unique. And are there any particular stories or rewarding experiences that you can talk to with somebody you've supported through that journey in a very top level way, of course?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, I mean, firstly, so I set up Toastmasters for Google 10 years ago. And that for me was like one of my biggest successes, because I went into that, I'm going to be honest, I was definitely also doing it for, part my self gain, part because I could also see that there was a need and opportunity for others. And I think when you set up a speaking platform like that for a big company like Google, there comes with some expectations. And I was definitely very much early stages of my speaking career at that point. And I just really, again, used that professional vulnerability and owned it. And I was like, look, I'm like one of you. I'm here to learn and grow. But I really did. We had a great team, and we ended up having to set up two clubs because it was so successful. And then winning a load of awards, being recognized as one of the most accomplished teams in Toastmasters, which is amazing. So I think that was brilliant. That set me off. From there, I was getting asked to go and, can you come and coach our team at Google? So then I was just like, yeah, okay. Went and started coaching lots of teams across Google, different departments, and taking the knowledge that I was getting taught externally, packaging it up into these trainings and learnings that still exist in our internal systems, which is brilliant. And just getting out and doing it. So that was, and then of course in lockdown that went global. And then I decided to actually do this as coaching outside of Google as well. And honestly, I do think it's the healing element that makes this so phenomenal. And I can tell you that, all of my clients are seeing incredible success in whatever way that is meaningful for them. One of my clients, we just set a target for 6 months of working together. She just hit it in 3 months. Wow. And she's on the way to doubling it. And it's just like amazing. Like seeing another client, him like kick off his company and sell his first batch of products. And seeing another client that I worked previously with last year actually get up and win a competition on stage. And like, for me, like that is a success. Although like I am very proud of myself for like getting over all of my fear and picking myself up when I failed. The big, I think, success for me is when I see others succeed. And actually going right back. That's something that used to really frustrate me, is that when I was little, I didn't have my thing. I was like, everybody had their thing, you know, they were good at running, or they were good at baking, or they were good at, and they knew they were going to go on and do these things in these areas they were great at. And I just like lots of different things. I could never really focus on one thing. And that's when I realized that actually my passion is helping other people find their passion, find their thing, and then really go and express that, go and communicate that with the world.
That's so rewarding. And I'm interested, do you think that people in general, maybe when you first start working with them, have no idea really what their full potential could be? Like maybe at the beginning, they're kind of starting and you almost set the bar, like just me, but like a little bit more. Do you work with others? Or have you seen that journey happening and they go, do you know what, I'm going to 10x what I'm doing now? Like really kind of, I think there's so much in potential that we just don't even scratch the surface of.
Yeah, I'm always pushing my clients to be like this, even this target that I was just talking about with this client. I was like, are you sure? I was like, should we add a zero on the end? She was like, oh, I don't know about that. I was like, should we though? Let's just like, I was like, obviously, like let's sit with a number that feels comfortable. Like, let's not do that, because that's easy, isn't it? Like, let's, it's the things that make us feel really uncomfortable. They're the things we should be going after. That's where we want to be gunning for. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that fear piece that's usually keeping us back, is like, okay, we'll set something that's a little bit more because that feels okay. But it's when you go really scary, you know, totally next level, that I think you feel uncomfortable. But, you know, it's almost as hard work to get to some of these things as just going the little 20% up sometimes.
Why do something that's easy? It's like there's a great quote, isn't there, actually? I think Ray Kroc did one of my favorite quotes. He said, like, yeah, there's no joy from walking, or achievement from walking a tightrope laid flat on the floor. And it's so true, isn't it? It's like, that would just be silly, wouldn't it? So actually we need to hoik it up in the air.
That's it. I like that. I'm gonna use that. So I want to talk a little bit more about your work in tech, and even through that, you are supporting still lots of women at Google and YouTube and women in tech. So what do you see now for women in tech? What are the opportunities? Do you still see that there's a lot of challenges, and how are you supporting your colleagues through those?
Yeah, I do see there are definitely still some challenges. Like, let's be honest, I think women in leadership roles is still yet to increase. So that's, and again, it's what makes great leaders. It's something that inspired me to want to conquer communications when I looked at all of my role models and great businesswomen and men in senior roles. It's, they all have really great communication skills. So that's something that I'm definitely helping other women towards. And but I do think there has been a shift. I do think there has been a change, especially in the role of women in leadership. And we've, like, going into, now that we are understanding a bit more about this, going into this soft power leadership, this togetherness. And I think that that has created space for other women to feel like that they can actually be powerful in a boardroom, and they can lead in a different way. And we've moved away from this, like, having to be masculine and, you know, and lead with our egos, or also, you know, actually sexualizing ourselves potentially. Previously we've seen, and moving away from that into this communication space where it's all about, like, leading through stories and vulnerability and bringing people along with us on that journey and on that ride. So I am seeing great change. However, like I said, there is still things we need to overcome. In the LGBT space, definitely we see panels where there are the same women stepping forwards, and panels in general, over 70% of panel members are always males. Really? And yeah, and this is it. And actually we need to create those opportunities. We always get told the same things. Oh, it's like, we couldn't find a woman, or there wasn't anybody good enough, or didn't have the right credentials. And I don't actually think that that is true, but to ensure that that isn't true, I am also committing myself at the moment to help women. So I'm actually doing some training courses in the LGBT space and in the women's space as well, to train women so that they can be heard, to find their voices and to go and get up and speak at these different opportunities.
Yeah, it's hugely important work. And I think the more women you can get putting themselves forward creates more role modelling, which I think is one of the strongest ways to get more women into leadership and kind of different types of roles, is somebody else goes before you. And it's not always the case. There's lots of people that have to be the first, but just having somebody think, okay, they look like me, they sound like me, like I'm no different, I can do that. But yeah, like you say, it's generational almost, the change, or the speed of change is so slow. But the more women that we can get building confidence and resilience, is just that feeling of, okay, yeah, I'm going to do it and take that first step, as you did all those years ago.
You're so right. And it is that, it's that diversity on panels, diversity of thoughts, diversity of stories. But also when you get somebody who looks and feels like you, honestly, that was a game changer in me coming out at work, is I saw a female who looked like me, who got up on stage and said, hey, you know, I'm gay and it's okay. I'm having a great time. And I was like, whoa, okay. I could relate to her. And I was like, maybe it's okay for me to do the same then. Maybe I can come out and that's okay. So this is it. We can create paradigm shifts, ways in people thinking differently and behaving and doing differently just through sharing our stories. It is so powerful.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it just, again, comes back to being that vulnerable and authentic person to stand up and share those parts of you, has given permission to somebody else that then has unlocked so much for you individually that maybe would have never happened if you hadn't heard that story. So yeah, I think you don't even know the impact of these words and these actions, and it might be years later actually that somebody tells you something. So yeah, absolutely worth the taking the ownership of doing that. So I want to talk a little bit about creativity and innovation, because on top of all of these things that you do, you're also a creative business partner for YouTube and bring brands to life. And I don't think sometimes we spend enough time on really being creative and having that sense of fun and creating advertising content that is, if nothing else, memorable. You know, we get so involved and we're in the B2B space, and a lot of it can be not so memorable, I would say. So can you talk a little bit about how do you bring that creativity to life at YouTube and with the brands, and just spending time in that creative space? I'm interested in your process and how you work with your clients there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I'm lucky enough to be in part of an incredible team. I'm fully convinced that I've got the best job at Google. I work for an incredible team called Creative Works. And funnily enough, what we do is work with our top advertisers to help make their creative work on YouTube. So that involves running lots of workshops and inspiration sessions where we bring to the table different creative ideas and what best practice really looks like, especially within YouTube. And yeah, it's a bit of like what you said, actually. It's those taking people out of the day to day, bringing them into a different environment, especially in those workshop settings where we can bring together all the different teams, the agencies, the client brands, and ourselves to ideate around what could this new campaign look like, and taking inspiration from different areas. And I think what I love the most about that is when brands aren't afraid. It goes back to that vulnerability. When they're not afraid to step out of their comfort zone and not do what they've always done and do something a little bit different. And actually, it's like times are changing. Times are changing. And, you know, we used to have these big, sexy, glossy ads, didn't we, that we ran. And now, yeah, they still exist. And there's a place for them, of course. But now, as we went through lockdown, that was a game changer, because then also then everything now is, you know, a bit more low key, low budget, approachable. It's all more now about a conversation with the audience. And so tapping into that, using creators and influencers in that kind of mid funnel. And how does that look for big brands and never done that before? And I think that can be, so now we're looking, you know, right across that full funnel, to see what does creativity look like at every stage of that journey. And I think, yeah, it's that vulnerability piece that I love when brands do.
Yeah, we like real stuff, no matter where that's coming from, whether it's brands or content creators or a speaker on stage. Like, we like the realness. And you're right, there is a space for all the glossy stuff still, but I think it does really resonate with your audiences when it feels more authentic. And do you have any exercises when you're doing these workshops with brands that you can share? Just things, you know, for companies or teams to really dive into their creative spirit? Anything specific in terms of exercises that helps everyone shake off what they always knew?
I really like we don't do this enough, I don't think. We do an expansive reductive process. We use design thinking principles. And one we used to do was called the rope of scope. So what we would do is, if you can imagine a circle on a page, and that's your rope. What's out of scope, what's in scope, basically, essentially, is what it is. So think of all of the wacky ideas that you can think of that are potentially out of scope, but could be phenomenal. Like, for example, we worked with a yogurt brand once, and we were talking about like sending cows to the moon. Like, that's potentially out of scope, but it was like a crazy idea. And then we were like, right, and now let's bring those ideas back into scope. And what could that actually mean? And in the end, what they ended up doing was they had like landing pages where there were cows flying across the moon. And like, you know, there was a bit more of a tangible idea behind it. So there you go. Get creative, get thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to take that. That's excellent. Okay, so moving on to someone that's listening to this and thinking, okay, I think I can put my hand up. I can ask the question. I'm going to put myself forward for that speaking session. We had your 3 points at the beginning. We'll come back to your other 3 points for advice for aspiring speakers. So if you just want to touch on that, you're talking to these people who are thinking about putting their hand up. What else do they need to know?
Yeah, so like, I'm going to reiterate it again. There are 2 options here, right? You can either take the really long, hard route, which is, you know, what I started to do before I took ownership, or you can take ownership and actually do it a lot quicker. And that is like going and finding somebody who's lived that journey and can teach you what they know through their experiences. I think that's really important. Make sure you vibe with them is really important when you're finding a coach, of course. And make sure that they are holding you accountable and getting you to do the things that scare you the most. I think beyond then getting a coach, it's like getting really clear on your narrative. Like, what is that one thing that you have to offer the world? What's that, you know, the thing that you can go and help somebody with? And what's that legacy that you want to leave behind? Because surely that's what this is all about, right? When you go, if it's the stories that are retold are the ones that are the best stories, in my opinion. So like, when you go, like, what if they were still talking about the things that you did whilst you're on that planet? Like, that would be pretty incredible, wouldn't it? And then I think my last tip, I guess, is before we start speaking, is to go and listen and to write. So go and listen to your audience, the people that you think you can help, and go and listen and think, like, you know, is your hypothesis of how they're feeling and how you think that you can help them, is that correct? Go and test that. Go and just have conversations with them and listen. And then also go and write. Like, so if you've got stories, get your black book out and start writing down those stories so that you can remember them, because they're the best bits. So like, when you need a story, you want to go back to that book and be like, oh, I need a really good way of explaining my point. And the best way to explain anything is through narrative and story.
That's great. I have listened to Bob Keeler speak before, and he said for business he just has about 200 stories, and he has them all in his drive, all organized by different things that you might need to roll out a story for, and a story for everything. And he knows them. He's got like 200 stories and he knows them. And it's just so impactful for you, because the storytelling is what we all buy into, but it needs to be smooth. You know, if you're standing up there, it needs to all make sense while you're telling that story, and have an arc to it. So it's not something that I thought of before, but actually documenting those stories so they're just kind of ready to pull out means I think it comes across much smoother. So I love that idea.
100%.
So our last question that we ask all of our guests is, what is a habit that you've developed or changed, something that costs just a little, but it has had a huge impact on your life?
Yes, I think this undoubtedly has to be language. Like, ultimately, that's what I'm studying in communication is language, and changing the way that I speak to myself is the communication we forget about. It's actually the most important conversation that we have is the one that we have with ourselves, and adjusting the words I use. So, for example, I don't use the H-A-R-D word, hard, unless it's like a past thing that's happened that was really bloody hard, like coming out. Then I don't talk about that because it's like it's something that I want to shift energetically. I want to make it easier, right? So it's just then it's just less easy and it's becoming easier. So I think things like that, we have to, you know, really appreciate the language that we use and the effect that that has on us. If we keep telling ourselves, I'm not very good at speaking, guess what? You're probably not going to be great at speaking. It's like if we get up in the morning and we say, oh, today's going to be rubbish, it's probably going to be rubbish. Whereas if we get up with a really good positive attitude of like, right, today is going to be brilliant, I got this, and that's it. And I think that positivity, that reframing of things to ourselves so that we're constantly seeing things in a more positive light can only lead to positivity.
That's so helpful, and it's so simple, but it's you really have to train yourself. I'm doing similar. I'm trying to not complain about anything. Just don't complain. No one likes a moaner. No one likes a whinger. Just get on with it. Don't complain.
I love that.
No one cares.
How's it going?
Good. I've got three small children, so I'm like, I have to bite my tongue sometimes. But, no, amazing. But yeah, no one's interested in your complaints. You just need to get on with it.
Before I go, do you want me to do the three last ones? The three final ones that I had. So this is about crafting your narrative, right? And how do we get people really engaged and compelled towards our narrative? And I think that we kind of touched upon it loosely. It was about grabbing that attention early doors. So really, like, how do we start strong? And it's the opposite of like the traditional story arc that we know, where you kind of like build up for climax and then you come to some sort of resolution at the end. We at YouTube now talk about like starting strong, like high impact, grab attention, and then using these unexpected shifts to actually keep people engaged, or intrigue, you might call it. So something like this, where you say, I'm going to give you three now, and then I'm going to actually give you three at the end, helps people to actually pay attention, keep listening to what you're going to say, because they want completion. They want to find out what are those other three things that you're going to say at the end. So I think that is one thing. How do you grab and sustain attention? The second one is, again, it's our language. So quite literally our language, the phrases that we use, the way that we speak to our audience, not chucking in a load of jargon and making it seem like we're really speaking to our audience, making you feel like the most special person by using different language techniques. And then keeping it really simple. I think, you know, too often we overcomplicate things. And it's because I know it comes from a good place. We just want to give away. Like, we just want to help people so much that we want to give them all of the knowledge. But actually, if we can strip it back and just have like one simple message per story or whatever we're delivering, it makes it much, much easier for the audience to actually absorb that information. So don't overcrowd it, because it leads to confusion. And like I said, if you can make it simple for people to understand and operate with you as well, the more likely they are to take action. So again, have that one simple action at the end that you want them to take. So there you go. Grabbing attention, the language you use, and keeping it super simple.
Perfect. I love it. And then hopefully people are retelling everybody about your session because you've followed those principles.
Exactly. Amazing. That's it.
So helpful and so practical, I think, for people to take that away from today. So thank you so much for being so generous with your time and your insights and your vulnerability. You are just an amazing human and love chatting to you. So we'll share all of your social links where everyone can get in touch. And thanks once again. Thank you for listening to this episode of Tag Lab. We are super excited to bring you the huge conversations that inspire growth in our digital world. Make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button to be notified as soon as the next episode is out. Thanks for listening.